Hello and welcome to the Symantec Cybersecurity Brief, our fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm Dick O'Brien and joining me today are Symantec threat researchers Chris Kiefer and Bridget O'Gorman. In this week's podcast, we'll be talking about how the FBI is warning of deepfakes being used to apply for remote tech jobs, the return of Raccoon Stealer, and how one ransomware group has now launched a bug bounty program. But first, let's talk about Bumblebee, because this week we at the Symantec Threat Hunter team published a new blog that was all about Bumblebee, a new piece of malware, a loader to be more specific, that has quickly emerged to take a central place in the cybercrime ecosystem. And here to talk to us today about Bumblebee is Chris, who was the principal researcher on the publication. I think it's his first time on the podcast, so welcome, Chris. Maybe you could start by just telling us what is Bumblebee, what kind of malware is it, and what can it do?
Yeah, hi, Dick. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, Bumblebee is fairly new. I think we first saw it back starting in March 2022. It's primarily a loader. And it's also a basic info stealer, and it essentially gives an attacker that initial foothold into a victim environment. It has some nifty capabilities, such as it performs initial system reconnaissance, collects information, and expels that data to an attacker-controlled system. It can also download and execute arbitrary payloads, copy and inject DLLs. Namely, LLL bins. Those are legitimate software, namely made by Microsoft. They inject WAV.exe, WAVMIG.exe, and imaging devices.exe with various different payloads. It also provides an attacker persistence on a system, and it also does anti-analysis checks. It wants to make sure when it runs, it does basic checks to make sure that, you know, it's running on a victim system and not on a researcher system. So it looks for presence of sandboxes and VMs and other specific running security processes. And if it finds itself any of that criteria is met, then it'll just cancel itself and that'll be the end of that. It has a few known delivery vectors. Like most malware, it is typically delivered through phishing email as an attachment. And it also is known to use another very crafty way to get onto a system by using a targeted website's contact forms. So, you know, if it pretends that it's interested in some sort of bid and, you know, hiring a company to do a job, and it'll find a company website and fill out a form, hey, we're interested in this software, you know, this software project, we'd like to consider hiring you, and just submit that form. And from there, it just kind of builds rapport, and eventually it'll get the victim willing to download its malware onto the system.
Okay. And from reading your work, the impression I got is like Bumblebee is, it's not the first kind of threat to do these sort of things. And perhaps its real significance is, you know, the number of attacks it is being quickly involved in, and I guess the seriousness of the attacks it's involved in. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. In fact, you know, there's a couple of reasons that's, you know, this is significant, you know, and so, an attack, you know, involving Bumblebee, I believe, should be considered very significant for a few reasons. One, it's very active. You know, various OSINT sources are reporting high activity in terms of number of phishes per day and sheer vastness of the organizations targeted worldwide. It's also associated with MINR, the group we call MINR. MINR is also known as Wizard Spider, and you know that association comes with it, you know, Bizarre Loader and Conti ransomware, which is among the fastest and most impactful of the ransomware attacks out there. And as I said, you know, Conti is believed to be linked with threat group MINR, In this connection definitely elevates significance even more, because MITRE is known to use, you know, exploit vulnerabilities, in some cases, zero-day vulnerabilities. And it has a long-running successful history of cyber criminal activity, namely big game hunting, its association with Ryuk ransomware attacks. The FBI has reported, you know, netted the group over $61 million. And it has other, you know, links to other infamous sophisticated malware like TrickBot, Ryuk, and Bizarre Loader. So definitely, if this is found in if an organization finds this in their environment, you know, it should be taken very seriously.
Okay. And the kind of threats you described there, they're pretty heavy hitters in terms of cybercrime. Due to the number of people who've adopted it and the nature of the groups who've adopted it, do you think that this transition was pre-planned, maybe?
I definitely think that's a likely scenario. We're seeing trends involving cybercrime syndicates who, like legitimate businesses, change and improve by investing in new technologies and methodologies. This includes malware, such as adopting new droppers, new loaders, new ransomware families, et cetera, over ones that have, you know, quote unquote, run its course. For example, in general, MITRE's progression from Dire to TrickBot, Ryuk, TrickBot, Conti, and now, you know, Bumblebee and Conti.
Okay. Now, if this was, say, a strategy to replace those older threats like TrickBot that you mentioned, why do you think that they've made this decision now?
Well, the reasons for this strategy isn't always clear. But like anything, I believe threats and their cunningness to get bigger and better payouts is constantly evolving. For example, once banking trojans were a moneymaker, then the financial industry greatly improved its security, increasing attackers' costs, and conversely lowering its profits. Now, as we know, data is king and has extreme value to multiple parties. For example, a victim organization that doesn't want their leaked data out there in the public, and other cyber criminals, foreign intelligence, et cetera. Cyber criminals know this, and I believe it is an essential driving factor that has led to a surging ransomware problem. So in short, the why varies and is debatable, but the advantages are clear. It improves threat operational security, it can evade security defenses, and frustrates attribution efforts. And now even can be the difference between profit or not, you know, like receiving ransomware payment or not.
Yeah, there's a lot at stake, all right, for the attackers. One of the interesting things about the blog was that you explained how Bumblebee is linked to lots of older attacks. Could you tell us how you as an investigator managed to make that link to lots of previous activity?
So I think one of the first things that caught my attention is the repeated pattern of the same 80 find binary with the same 80 find helper file, a batch file. Now this 80 find binary, you know, it's used to perform Active Directory reconnaissance. It was used in several different attacks, and it's not just any of the binaries. This is one that was compiled in 2015. So it's been around for, you know, in terms of technology, you know, for ages. So in my opinion, that's unusual, especially since there are so many other newer versions available. Now, in addition to that, we noticed multiple forwarded attacks, which involve the same old 2015 80 find binary and the same 80 find bat file. So that got our attention. We started looking more closely, and when we looked, we noticed that these were associated with attacks that we found to be confirmed to involve Conti or believed to be involved Conti. So further, most of those cases involved other TTPs, network ISVs, and tools that were strongly consistent with Conti's historical attacks and their playbook that was leaked in, August of 2021. And that playbook was, you know, essentially just a detailed guide document given to Conti's affiliates, which basically try to standardize how they carried out their ransomware attacks.
Okay. So in this case, it's just really one of the tools has been refreshed, but they're still using lots of older tools. Given the number of links it's got to like current activity and the historic activity that you were talking about there, do we have any information yet as to who's behind Bumblebee, who's created it?
Well, I think this is still a work in progress, but I think there are some, between the evidence that we've compiled at Symantec's Threat Hunter team and from OSINT, various OSINT professionals, I think there's evidence to indicate that Bumblebee is a what they call an initial access broker and has a strong working relationship with top-tier Russian cybercrime syndicates, namely the Miner Group. And further, Google, for example, Google Tag has published circumstantial evidence that suggests the threat behind Bumblebee may be physically located in Central or Eastern Europe time zone. But of course, this assessment may change as more evidence is discovered. But I think that's kind of where we're at right now. It's still a work in progress, but there are some clues out there.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming onto the podcast, Chris. I hope this won't be your last visit. But let's turn to Bridget because she's got a couple of things that she wanted to discuss that have been in the news this week. I think the first one being the return of a fairly high profile name on the cybercrime threat landscape.
Hi, Dick. Yeah, the Raccoon Stealer, Info Stealer as a service, malware as a service, appears to have returned and is reportedly back on sale on some underground forums. Now, Raccoon Stealer was very active, I suppose. It's been around for a good while, but I would say it was very active, especially last year and probably into the start of this year. But it announced in March that it was going on a hiatus after it said that one of its lead developers was killed during the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And this led then to some of the former users of Raccoon Stealer moving to using other malware as a service info stealers, with developers of, for example, the Mars Stealer, Info Stealer, posting on some Russian hacking forums that have been really overwhelmed with messages following Raccoon's retirement. So that would, I suppose, give an indication of how widely used Raccoon Stealer was at the time that it kind of went on hiatus. Now, Raccoon did say at the time that it would be back, and it just seemed to have followed through on that now, with Raccoon Stealer 2.0 now available on underground forums, according to some researchers from Sequoia who spotted this. Now, the Raccoon's admin actually teased the launch of this version 2.0 on some hacking forums at the start of June, around the 2nd of June, saying at the time the testing of the new version had actually been underway for a couple of weeks at that stage. So this latest version of the Stealer reportedly has elevated password stealing functionality, as well as some upgraded operational capacity compared to the previous version. It's basically, it can kind of do all the things we expect of info stealers, I suppose. It can steal basic system information, it can steal passwords from browsers, cookies, can steal autofill data, cryptocurrency wallets, logins, individual files and screenshots, and as well it can pull lists of installed applications as well. So there is a pretty powerful info stealer, so it's obvious why it's quite popular, I would say. At present, the Raccoon Stealer 2.0 is only being made available to quite a limited number of hackers, apparently, and most likely previous customers or people kind of known to the developers behind it. And the cost at the moment is $275 per month or $125 a week. But the Sequoia researchers who've analysed this return, they said that this latest version lacks modern anti-analysis and detection avoidance mechanisms. So it's probably still under development, which is probably why it hasn't been made more widely available at this stage. But, given how widely used Raccoon Stealer was before it went on hiatus, it is likely we'll see it probably being used more widely again once it's kind of becomes more widely available, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds likely. All right. Now, let's turn to our next topic. Chris was talking earlier on about the kind of growing professionalization amongst cybercrime gangs and how they begin to resemble legitimate businesses. And I think this is probably apparent in the next thing you wanted to discuss, which is the rollout of a new version of the Lockbit ransomware.
Yeah, so the Lockbit ransomware operators have been busy lately, and they've released Lockbit 3.0. So this revamped kind of Lockbit, I suppose, was released last weekend, the end of last week, after reportedly being in beta testing for the past 2 months. So quite a long period of beta testing, really. It's unclear at this stage, because obviously it's just appeared, if any changes have been made to the actual encryptor. But the ransom note has changed. It's no longer named restoremyfiles.txt and now uses the naming format ID, basic ID of the victim, I suppose, .readme.txt. So one of the more notable things about this launch is that the Lockbit operators have also introduced the first bug bounty program that's been offered by a ransomware gang, offering bug bounties of up to $1 million, apparently, for flaws found in the ransomware's code. And they're also offering rewards for personal identifiable information for on high-value targets, for security exploits, and more, really. So nearly like access broker type, I suppose, level of offering of rewards. And they're also offering rewards partly for ideas on improving the ransomware operation, which is pretty interesting approach to take. So we'll have to see if anything kind of comes as that, really. The Lockbit, you know, ransomware service operation, it's been active since 2019, you know, and as we said, this is 3.0, so it's already gone through two versions. And I suppose we've seen kind of peaks and troughs in its activity, but the drop in Conti activity in May saw kind of Lockbit 2.0 sort of surge to the top of the ransomware activity list. There was a report from NCC, and they found that ransomware attacks dropped by 18% in May overall. So that was probably due to Conti kind of going quiet for a while when they had been so active recently. But of the attacks that did occur, Lockbit was behind 40% of those attacks in May, you know, which it was way ahead of, you know, Hive, which was next on the list, and Black Bossa, which were both had responsible for 7% of attacks. So it was really kind of dominating there, while Conti is kind of got a bit quiet at the moment. So I think with this new version and with the Conti actors kind of currently busy sort of regrouping and rebranding, we think we may be seeing more kind of strong activity from Lockbit over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, certainly. Bug bounty is pretty ambitious. All right. I don't know if we'll ever find out if it worked for them or not, but it's an interesting development.
Definitely interesting.
Yeah, finally, this is a bit of an odd one. The FBI is warning about deepfakes being used to apply for remote tech jobs. Kind of sounds a bit science fiction-y, this one.
Yeah, I know it's a strange one, really, for the FBI, I suppose, to be warning about. You know, the FBI, they've issued this warning. As I said, they've seen an increase in complaints from companies reporting the use of deepfakes as well as stolen personally identifiable information to apply for what they said was a variety of remote work and work at home positions. And the positions that have reportedly been applied for include positions in information technology and computer programming, working in database and software related job functions. And some of these positions, probably most of them really, would provide access to customer information, to financial data, to obviously corporate IT databases and other proprietary information. So that, you know, that you would imagine that's the purpose of applying for these jobs. If these are malicious actors, you'd imagine obviously the goal here is to gain access to companies' sensitive information. So deepfakes, these video and audio deepfakes, for people who don't know what they are, they're generated using artificial intelligence, basically, or machine learning technologies. And they can be difficult to distinguish from the real thing. I mean, people have probably seen, you know, videos of YouTube of Tom Cruise being kind of deepfaked and stuff like that. And they have previously been used, you know, in more serious capacities to spread fake news as well as, you know, for so-called revenge porn. And in this instance here, where the kind of the job interviews are occurring, victims have reported the use of voice spoofing or potentially voice deepfakes being used during online interviews of potential applicants. But they mustn't have been great ones, because the victims or the people who were doing the interviewing, I suppose, were able to notice in certain instances that the actions and, say, lip movement of the person who was seen on camera wasn't coordinating with the audio of the person speaking, while other times, you know, it was kind of coughing or sneezing, you know, either occurring on camera and the sound wasn't matching or vice versa. So they were kind of able to, I suppose, cop that these were deepfakes in that way. And they said as well that the people who were using these deepfakes had also used PII stolen from other people when they were applying for these jobs. And I guess I found this story interesting for a few reasons. I mean, the kind of FBI releasing a warning about something like this is kind of interesting. But as well, in light of the Dream Job campaign, you know, that we've spoken about a few times in this podcast, where we saw in that instance fake job offers being leveraged in an attempt to get people to engage with malicious actors. So, you know, it was a different kind of approach then, but it was, you know, another example of job offers and, I suppose, recruitment being leveraged by malicious actors in an effort to, you know, gain information about people or companies or that kind of thing. And these kind of campaigns, you know, they could do require a good bit of effort on the part of malicious actors, you know, research into the company, into the job, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's a bit of a long game, I suppose. So they are likely perpetrated by, you know, fairly sophisticated actors or actors who have a bit of backing behind them that they can kind of sustain putting in this kind of, you know, playing this kind of long game for the work, you know, which we know to be the case of Dream Job, obviously, which we believe to be the work of Lazarus, which is obviously a state-sponsored group. And I suppose the story is also interesting as well as, I guess it's kind of a real-world application of deepfakes, you know, that we have heard a lot about, but, you know, kind of outside of the, you know, very, like, the quite serious use of them in revenge porn, or else things like social media, fake news on social media, and you know, we have been kind of seeing them deployed in other real world scenarios. So I suppose it's interesting to see that this is a way they could be used. And obviously with so many people working remotely now, I guess, you know, the prospect of being able to entirely fake your identity is probably more achievable for people than it ever has been before.
Yeah. And you think as the technology improves, we're just going to see it being leveraged more and more often, you know, as people be able to create more and more plausible deepfakes. So
yeah, this is a bit worrying, really.
Okay, let's wrap it up there. If you've been enjoying our podcast, don't forget to subscribe to avoid missing out on all of our future episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Threat Intel. If you'd like to read our latest research, including our work on Bumblebee, which we were discussing with Chris a little bit earlier, check out our blog, which can be found at semantic-enterprise-blogs.security.com/blogs/threat-intelligence. Since we're now into the month of July, we are, as usual, going to take a little break from recording for the summer, but we'll be back again in September. So until then, thank you and goodbye, and have a good summer.